Achieving and maintaining accreditation is one of the foundational requirements for a preventive medicine residency program. In this episode, Dr. Kate Hatlack, Executive Director for the Review Committees for Medical Genetics and Genomics, Pathology, and Preventive Medicine at the ACGME, explains how the accrediting process works, how programs can ensure they get and retain accreditation, and how ACGME can help programs provide the best possible resident experience. All right, so in this session of the PMR Toolkit podcast, we're joined with Dr. Kate Hatlack of the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education to talk through some of the key considerations, both for starting a new program and getting the program certified and accredited, but also for, you know, maintaining high standards of accreditation and certification through the life of the program. So Dr. Hatlack, thank you for taking the time to join us today. And I don't know if you want to take a moment to introduce yourself.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here. So my name is Kate Hatlack. Again, I'm the Executive Director for the Review Committee for Preventive Medicine at the ACGME. I also work with the Review Committees for Medical Genetics and Genomics and Pathology. I've been at the ACGME for about a little over 7 years now. I've been in an executive director role for about 4 years, and I've been working specifically with the preventive medicine community since January of 2020.
Awesome. And so can you, big picture question, what is ACGME and what role does it play with residency programs?
Sure. So the ACGME, that's the organization that sets and monitors the professional standards essential in preparing residents and fellows to deliver safe, high-quality medical and medically related care in the United States. And so the ACGME, where they come in, they're the accreditor. So they're the organization that oversees all of those residency and fellowship programs. So that oversight is done by monitoring each program's compliance against those standards. And those standards are the program requirements for each specialty and subspecialty. So, and then how that's done, each specialty has its own review committee made up of experts within that specialty community. Mm-hmm. And those review committees provide feedback to the programs either through areas of noncompliance, citations, or areas of concern. And contrary to popular belief, the review committees do also recognize exemplary performance and innovation. I think in a nutshell, that's what the ACGME is.
Okay. And so you said part of the in the name, the kind of key goal of the organization is it's an accrediting body. So what does that process look like for, particularly for someone looking to start a new program who doesn't have a history of accreditation? You're kind of making this new thing from whole cloth. Where do they start in the process? What are the kind of things they need to have in place in order to get their program started and accredited and up to standards? And, you know, where are some of the, I guess, the hurdles in preparation for this, you know, first accreditation process? Where do those occur?
Sure. So the first thing that will need to happen to kind of get the, once it's decided, you know, that the program wants to apply for accreditation, the first thing is that the DIO, that stands for Designated Institutional Official, that's the person that's going to oversee all of the ACGME accredited programs at a particular sponsoring institution or organization. They need to go into our accreditation data system, which some programs may know as ADS or ADS. They're going to need to go into the system and initiate that application. And that opens it up, then the program personnel can go in and start filling it out. And so in terms of what's going to be needed for that application on the program side, we break the application down into three parts. The first is going to be sort of what we call the common information. That's going to include, you know, the real basic information about your program, you know, what sites or institutions are your residents going to be training at? How many residents do you want to request to have in your program? What are your basic sort of program structure, policies? And then a big part of that common information is going to be the faculty roster. And so the program is going to need to have CV information for any faculty members they want to list, because the system is going to ask for their prior, you know, education and training in graduate medical education. What are their credentials? You know, their certification, their licensure. What sort of involvement do they have in scholarly work or professional committees, those sorts of things? So that's something that's even if the DIO hasn't initiated the application yet, you can start collecting that information and have it ready to go. So the second part of the application is going to be what we call the specialty specific application, because so you probably can guess that's going to be what's specific to the specialty that you are applying for accreditation in. And so that's going to ask questions about like how will the residents gain competency in these specialty specific areas? You know, what other sorts of personnel or learners may be rotating through the program, those sorts of questions. And then the third part of the application is going to be a bunch of document uploads. That's going to include program policies about like supervision policy, well-being. You're going to need to show evaluation forms for your residents, for your faculty members and the program, as well as the block diagram. So again, the best thing a program could do if they want to apply, start gathering all that information right away. Even if, you know, there's the DIO, if there's, you know, a holdup or just a little bit of delay getting the actual application initiated, the program can have all of this information ready to go so that as soon as the application is open, they're not spending time chasing information down. They're just ready to put it all in the system. And the biggest thing I would say to watch out for when doing an application is inconsistency, you know, saying different things in different parts of the application. And what I mean by that, if one part of your application says, you know, residents will spend X number of months at, you know, this particular site or experience, and then your block diagram shows Y number of months, the review committee is not going to know, you know, which is accurate. So watching out for those inconsistencies. Also, reading the program requirements and making sure as you're answering questions and providing documentation that what you're putting into your application is in compliance with the program requirements.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And so for a residency director who maybe is not looking to build a program from scratch but is inheriting one, I'm assuming the DIO is probably the first person they would talk to at their institution. But, you know, where else can they see resources and kind of figure out where their program is at in the accreditation process, kind of what the history of the program is? I know you mentioned, like, are there any areas for improvement or things like where would someone coming into a program kind of need to go to kind of dig in and figure out how they need to prepare for reaccreditation and for evaluation?
Sure. And like you said, the DIO is a great place to start because there should be some, you know, continuity there. If the program has an associate or an assistant program director that sort of bridges the gap between the old and the new program director, they also may be a resource. But also going into ADS, I mean, that's where all of the program's information is going to be. And thinking about if the program has any citations or areas for improvement existing, there's a section in ADS that's all of the letters of notification to the program from the review committee. So a program director, new or old, can go into that section of ADS and look up the whole history of letters. So not even just the most recent one, if they want to track back or see any, you know, has this been an issue in the past? So that would be, you know, the one of the first places a new program director would want to go. I will say contacting review committee staff too, you know, we're a great resource, especially with new program directors as they're kind of navigating the system or what do I need to watch out for? You know, if they've gone in and kind of found their letter of notification and maybe they have questions about, what does this mean? Or, you know, I wasn't here when this happened. How can I work to fix it? Myself and my team as the review committee support staff, we're also happy to be a resource to navigate some of those changes in leadership.
And then kind of continuing on, I guess, the life cycle of the program. Could you walk us through the process for evaluation and recertification? You know, what's the timeline for that like? Is it every year, every 10 years? And is there kind of like an interim period? And I guess, how can programs be best prepared for evaluation and also, you know, use that as an opportunity to kind of optimize and improve their program?
So each program, except for, you know, brand new programs within like 2 years of getting getting approved for accreditation. But aside from that, each program gets reviewed in some form or fashion every year. That's the tenet of the current accreditation system that the ACGME is using, is that it's this continuous model. There's continuous observation, improvement, reobservation, et cetera. So what that looks like is that, you know, programs are entering all of this information. We talked about that, you know, this a little bit ago, into ADS. And so every fall, what happens is programs are evaluated on a number of indicators that show outcome measures. Because that's the other tenet of the current accreditation system, is a focus on outcomes. You know, are the programs, are their outcomes good? Every fall, programs are evaluated on those outcomes, and some examples are resident fellow and faculty scholarly activity, the program's performance on the certification exams, and resident fellow and faculty surveys are examples of some of those metrics. So, and if a program sort of passes muster, all their outcomes, you know, we're kind of within the norms. We have a whole data team at the ACGME that does a lot of the number crunching and shows us, you know, standard deviations and metrics, things like that. So if a program passes muster, and that's the vast majority of the programs, to be honest, their outcomes look good, then they don't need any further review. That's, you know, they're getting a review, but it's kind of a high level review. Outcomes look good. If one or more of those indicators, if there's some sort of outlier going on in the data, then that would require some sort of follow-up. That could mean maybe the program's going to get a couple of areas for improvements. It could be that the program is going to go through an in-depth review from our review committee, again, made up of experts in the fields. Sometimes it's a site visit, and I will just take a moment to say, site visits are scary. I know they're not meant to be. you know, really, it's meant to be a chance to just get, like we call, boots on the ground, or you know, faces on the screen in the Zoom era, a chance to interview the residents and fellows. And a lot of times, site visits may clear up some of the concerning issues in a program. And then the last piece of follow-up may be a request for clarifying information. So, and then all of those would result in some sort of review by the committee. They will give each program an accreditation status within 5 days. We try to make it sooner. After a meeting, every program will get an email that pretty much says, you were reviewed at this recent meeting. Here's the accreditation status. You know, and here's the effective date. And then a detailed letter of notification, which I talked about earlier, that follows within about 60 days after the meeting. And we hand draft all of those letters. So it does take some time, but, you know, we want to be very deliberate and helpful in our feedback to the program from the review committee. So, and again, the bottom line here is that the vast majority of programs are going to receive continued accreditation annually. And that's the status you want to have. That's the best status. So most programs get just that high-level review if their outcomes look good. And then the programs that may have some issues, they will have some sort of a further follow-up.
Okay. So there's not this one big moment you're building up to. It's a much more fluid process based around kind of strong performance outcomes. And it's pretty objective in that manner.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So there's one other thing that you mentioned earlier, and that's ACGME kind of sets the common requirements and curriculum standards. And you mentioned that those are decided on by a kind of committee of expert reviewers. But how do program directors use that to plan their curricula? How can they use that as a resource as they're setting up their program to plan out rotations, or you know, figure out what faculty they need to be recruiting kind of in the earlier stages? Is that a helpful resource for them, these guidelines? And, you know, how can they best make use of it?
I would hope that the program requirements are helpful guidelines, because they provide sort of the a high level sort of guidebook, if you will. The review committees intentionally give programs a lot of leeway in terms of the specifics of how they want to structure their programs, but there certainly are requirements that the committees feel are absolutely essential to ensuring that, you know, everyone that graduates from this program will have a minimum a minimum standard of education and training. And that is what an accreditor does. They set the minimum standards and they allow room for programs to go above and beyond and innovate as they choose. And so program directors can really use those program requirements, again, as sort of a checklist informing the kind of the bones, if you will, of their program. You mentioned faculty members, and there's certainly requirements about what qualifications faculty members have to have, as well as a minimum number of core faculty. So those are checkboxes to building that faculty roster. Section 4 of the program requirements, I like to call that the meat of the requirements because that's where all the curricular stuff shows up. Section 4 is going to say, here are, you know, things in the six ACGME competency areas that residents are expected to do upon graduation. So that's, you know, program directors should be looking at what sort of experiences do I need to have to ensure residents can do this when they graduate. The other big thing in Section 4 is going to be any required lectures or other sort of didactics, and then some required rotations. For example, in preventive medicine, programs have to, or residents have to have at least 2 months of direct patient care experience in each year of the program. So again, it's a checkbox to set those bones, and program directors should use that as the foundation. And then they can sort of fill in the gaps in the lectures and didactics or the block diagram with whatever other experiences that they think are going to best, you know, represent the education and training of their program.
Awesome. So my last few questions kind of related more to your interactions with the program directors, which I'm sure you've had quite a few. So I guess first, what are some of those common questions you hear, particularly from new directors? And what are the most helpful resources that you typically refer them to as they're going through the certification and evaluation process?
Sure. And I will say one of the most common questions I hear, kind of specific to preventive medicine, is questions about funding. And I do know that in preventive medicine that funding is a unique challenge that a lot of other ACGME accredited specialties don't have to deal with, or, you know, don't have to maybe have the same level of challenge. So that's a common question. And I will just say, as I say to anyone who asks me, you know, the ACGME doesn't get involved with funding. You know, as an accreditor, our job is to set the minimum standards for education. So from a review committee perspective, as long as the minimum requirements for program leadership and program coordinator dedicated time are met, and that, you know, residents and fellows are getting the benefits and salary as outlined in the institutional requirements, that's as far into the sort of the funding pool that the ACGME will wade. The rest is up to the programs. Other common questions, you know, we do get some questions about faculty member qualifications. You know, would this faculty member be qualified to be a core faculty member? You know, could they serve as program director? Those are hard to give blanket answers to because, you know, each individual is going to have their own set of qualifications. Right. But I do encourage programs, new program directors or established programs, to reach out if they have questions. But I will say that's one of the newer things that's in the program requirements is that non-physician individuals can be faculty members and core faculty members at the discretion of the program director. In terms of resources, maybe this is cliche, but I mean, really, the ACGME website is a great place to go. The preventive medicine, there's a whole preventive medicine section that's going to have not only the current program requirements, but also frequently asked questions for each specialty or subspecialty, as well as other documents with guidance about things such as, you know, what if my program wants to change their complement, or what if I want to do international rotations? We, you know, again, those are common areas of questions. So we've developed some guidance documents as resources. There's also on that preventive medicine section, there's links to the milestones and a whole host of milestones resources that a lot of people don't know are available. There's a lot of, you know, guidebooks and toolkits and things like that. There's also a guide to the common program requirements and kind of how to put things into ADS. Mm-hmm. And we also link to presentations recently given to the specialty community. For example, the preventive medicine specialty update at the ACGME annual educational conference. And of course, like I said before, review committee staff, you can find our contact information there as well. And we are absolutely here to help and answer questions.
Great. So last question, you mentioned right up front that, you know, one of the things that ACGME tries to do is shine a spotlight on programs that are doing things really well. So not getting too much into specifics of specific programs and what they're doing, but what are some of the best practices you see successful programs and successful program directors do that, you know, consistently meet and exceed the program requirements and standards and maintain that high certification status?
Sure. So I will just briefly kind of harken back to that sort of accuracy and consistency piece. I know it seems like a lot of sort of, you know, paperwork to have to put this much effort into the system. And I used to work as a program coordinator, so I get it. I get ADS is a lot of work. But again, that's how you communicate what's going on in your program to the review committee. They're not mind readers. So if it's not in ADS or it's inconsistent, then, you know, they start to question maybe, you know, what's really going on in the program, or how is this actually running? So again, it seems like a lot of extra effort, but really focusing on accuracy and consistency. Aside from that, in terms of best practices, being proactive, you know, again, like I said earlier, reading the program requirements. And I know we've had a lot of program requirement revisions in the last couple of years, so it's been hard to keep up with, I know, and then add in a global pandemic, and that just makes it, you know, doubly hard to keep up.
Sure.
But the program directors that are keeping up with the changes or reaching out to us as staff or reading the frequently asked questions, you know, they get that clarification and they can make the changes needed in their program before it comes to the review committee, and then maybe it's turning into an AFI or a citation. So The more program directors can just be proactive too in communicating to the review committee. You know, say they get the results of their resident fellow survey and there were a couple areas where maybe the compliance kind of dipped. It's not required, but, you know, the review committee really appreciates programs who, in ADS in the major changes section, they'll say, yeah, we saw that our evaluation section dipped a little bit. You know, here are the steps we took to proactively try to bring those scores back up. So I would say checking for accuracy, consistency, and also just being proactive. You know, if you want to boil it down to a couple buzzwords, those are the words I would give.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up that, you know, future current program directors might find helpful?
The other big piece, or the other sort of message I would give, is just don't be afraid of the ACGME. I know a lot of people, you know, accreditation and sort of being that oversight entity can be a little bit scary, but really the goal of the review committee, who is made up of a lot of program directors and former program directors, the goal is to make your program better, not to punish you. And I know site visits and citations may feel like punishments, but I promise they're not meant to be. Don't be afraid of us. And again, don't be afraid to reach out to staff if you have questions. We'd much rather have you, you know, interpret a program requirement or, you know, fix an issue before it rises to the level that it has to go to the committee.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the time today. We really appreciate it. And thank you for all you're doing to help programs, you know, really excel.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to do this.